Mr. President, distinguished delegates.
የዓለም ጸጥታ አዋኪና ለሰላም ጉዳይ መሰናክል የሆኑትን ሁሉ አይነተኛ ችግሮች እዚህ ላይ ልንጠቅሳቸው እንፈቅዳለን።
Since the beginning of modern civilization, generations of weakness and inherited only conflicts of world wars. But behold the marriage supper of the lamb and bridegroom unto his bride. Then shall the earth's children know the true expression of one love. Then Mother Earth shall honeymoon in peace, forever eliminating aspirations, lust.
Well, thank you, everybody. Wow, that was a hot thing there. Confrontation. Damian Marley. Of course, that's the beginning of that song. I love that song. It's very much of today, I would say. Taking in hand of circumstances and things going around the world and have been going around for, seems like, since 1913, right? Or even before. Before I get into my main subject of today, there's just a couple announcements I do want to make. One of which is, we all know that coming up is 9/11, the travesty that happened exactly 10 years ago. And for this time, I would like to for a reminder for everybody, for those who have died and those who have been affected or died or even suffering as a result of 9/11, my heart and my thoughts go out to those souls, to their loved ones and their families. God bless you all. I do want to know, because every time I think about that day, it's pretty heavy. I was thinking about all the people who died because of that. But there does need to be an understanding of the truth of what happened there. I'm afraid that the way things are until people can wake up, that will be the JFK of this generation. Like what happened with the magic bullet theory and the Warren Commission. Will people ever wake up and realize the lies that have been told? So I'll just leave it at that. Now, just for an update real quick. On September 16th, I'm going to have a very, very special guest. You definitely want to hear her. Carrie Fezza, who is an intuitive astrologist. I've had her many times on my show, almost every 3 months, giving her quarterly report, doing her analysis based upon the cosmos. It's always a must-see show because she's been highly, highly, highly accurate. Do listen in. It'll be very enlightening to hear her, what she has for the next 3 months. Again, that's September 16th. Also, for those who are in Los Angeles area or will be in the Los Angeles area or know of people in the Los Angeles area, I will be doing, of course, my Kabbalah class at Psychic Eye Bookstore. It will contain the real aspects of it, and it starts on September 15th. It's every Thursday starting at 7:30 p.m. That will be on every Thursday. So if anybody is living in that area, do tell your friends or feel free to come. It's going to be very reasonable, $10 a class. It's like going to a movie. I can't believe how cheap that is. But hey, I feel honored just to do this class and hand out some information and doing the real understanding of Kabbalism and its retrospect. If you have any questions, you always can call. The number there to call to register or have any questions regarding is 818-906-8263. Of course, you can email me direct, and I'll be happy to explain to you the specifics of the class or classes. Again, look forward to those who come. Now, getting into the subject of today, and the reason why I feel it's probably highly controversial what I'm about to say, because I know people will be all, come on, because you know where I'm coming from and what I'm at or whatever. But it is what it is. And I'm just going to lay out the facts. I'm separating the truth from the lies and the misinformation, the blatant propaganda of hate that's been going on. And yes, I'm telling you, the myth of Palestine. And it is a product of the New World Order. I repeat it again. It is the myth of Palestine and is definitely a product of the New World Order. And I'll explain to you how and why. First, here are just the facts. I'm only talking the facts. I'm not going to give any opinions. These are facts. These are based upon commentaries of the past, okay, and specifics. First, those who don't understand or don't know, Palestine is Latin for Philistine, that the Romans used after the destruction of the Second Temple and crushing the Second Rebellion of the Jewish Revolt, which was the Second Revolt. This was basically an FU to the Jews. The country since the time of Babylon, by the way, was called Judea, hence the name Jews. Jew means from Judea. This is why they are called Jews, not because of Judaism. That's from there, from an area called Judea. Jew was also because it's the tribe of Judah, where most of the Jews' lineage are, but they incorporated between Benjamin and the tribes of Levi, were commonly called Jews, falling in line of the tribe of Judah, because of the, where they lived. But again, Jew means Judea. And where is Judea? Israel. Palestinians or Philistines were from Greece. They are not Arabs of today who call themselves Philistines. In fact, you can't even say, they can't even say Palestine. They would say Palestine. There's no P in Arabic. They would use the word Philistine. Now, how could they be a Philistine? Philistine is some Greek, and they are certainly not Greek. That's just the fact of semantics. Okay. Now, the myth are, like I said, are the Arabs who call themselves Palestinians really indigenous from that area called Israel or what they call Palestine? The answer, the fact, is no. They are not indigenous to that area. That is a fact. Here, example. Wali Shoabat, a Palestinian Arab, he referred to, and this is his words, as I lived in Palestine, everyone I knew could trace their heritage back to the original country their great-grandparents came from. Everyone knew their origin was not from the Canaanites, but ironically, this is the kind of stuff our education in the Middle East included. The fact is that today's Palestinians are immigrants from the surrounding nations. I grew up well knowing the history and origins of today's Palestinians as being from Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Christians from Greece, Muslims for Shirkas from Russia, Muslims from Bosnia, and even Bedouin Jordanians from next door. My grandfather, who was a dignitary in Bethlehem, almost lost his life by Abdul Qadir al-Husseini, the leader of the Palestinian Revolt, also known as the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, after being accused of selling land to Jews. He used to tell us that his village, Beit Zahir, the Shepherd's Field in Bethlehem area, was empty before his father settled in the area with only six other families. Six other families in Bethlehem, okay? The town has now grown to 30,000 inhabitants. This is, of course, way back when, right? Were they, these Arabs, who call themselves Palestinians, always the majority of the land of Israel, or as they call Palestine, as being the true inhabitants of the land? The answer is no. Mark Twain, Innocents Abroad, 1867, as is during his visits to the land what he called the Holy Land, there is not a solitary village throughout its whole extent, Valley, Jezero, Galilee, not for 30 miles in either direction. One may ride 10 miles here and about, not see 10 human beings. For the sort of solitude make one dreary. Come to Galilee, Nazareth, forlorn. Jericho lies moldering ruin. Bethlehem and Bethany in their poverty and humiliation. Untenanted by any living creature. A desolate country whose soil is rich enough but is given over wholly to weeds. A silent, mournful expanse. A desolation. We never saw a human being on the whole route. Hardly a tree or shrub, anything. Even the olive tree and the cactus, whose fast friends of the worthless soil had almost deserted the country. Palestine sits in sackcloth and ashes, desolate and unloving. From Gunner Edward Webb, Palestine Exploration Fund, Corollary Statement, page 86, Dahas History, page through also 38. In 1590, a simple English visitor to Jerusalem wrote, "Nothing there is but sense, but a little of old walls, which is yet remaining, and all the rest is grass, moss, weeds, with much like to a piece of rank, moist ground." Thomas Shaw, mid-1700s. "The land in Palestine is lacking in people till its fertile soil." British archaeologist, that was Thomas Shaw, mid-1700s. Count Constantine Francois Follet in 18th century, also was a very well-known French author and historian at that time, said, "Palestine is a ruined, desolate country. The Arabs themselves cannot be considered but temporary residents. They pitched their tents in its grazing fields, built their places of refuge in its ruined cities. They created nothing in it. Since they were strangers to the land, they never became its masters. The desert wind that brought them hither could one day carry them away without leaving behind them a sign of their passage through it." William Thackeray, From Jaffa to Jerusalem in 1844. "Then we entered the hill district. Our path lay through the clattering bed of ancient stream, whose brawling waters have rolled away into the past, along with the fierce and turbulent race who once inhabited these savage hills. They have been in cultivation here 2,000 years. The mountains are huge stony mounds, and environing this rough path have level ridges all the way up to their summits. On these parallel ledges, there is still some fertile and soil, and water flowed, and the country was savage with extraordinary population, which, according to the sacred histories, was crowded into the region. These mountain steps have been gardens and villages, such as we now could have been thriving hills of Rhine. Now the district is quite deserted. You ride among what seemed to be to so many petrified waterfalls. We saw no animals moving from stony breaks, scarcely even a dozen little birds in the whole course of the ride." James Finn, British Council, 1857. "The country is considerable degree empty of inhabitants. Therefore, its greatest need is of body population." B.W. Johnson in Young Folks, Bible Lands, Chapter 4, that was in 1892. "There are many proofs, such as ruins, broken aqueducts, remains of old roads, which show that it has not always been so desolate as it seems now. In portion of the plain between Mount Carmel and Jaffa, one sees but a rarely a village or even sites of human life. There are some rude mills which here are turned by the stream. A ride of a half an hour brought us to the ruins of ancient Caesarea, or Caesarea, once a city, 200,000 inhabitants, and the Roman capital of Palestine, now entirely deserted. As the sun was setting, we gazed upon the desolate harbor, once filled with ships, looked over the sea in vain. In this once crowded mart, filled with a din of traffic, there was the still of silence of the desert. After our dinner, we gathered in our tent as usual to talk over the incidents of the day or a history of locality. It was sad, as I laid upon my couch tonight, to listen to the mourning of the waves and to think of the desolation around us. The area was underpopulated and remained economically stagnant until the arrival of the first Zionist pioneers in the 1800s, who came to rebuild the Jewish land. The country had remained the Holy Land in the religious and historical consciousness of mankind, which associated it with the Bible and the history of the Jewish people. Jewish development in the country also attracted a large number of other immigrants, Arab, as well as Jewish. The road leading from Gaza to the north was only a summer track suitable for transported by camels and carts. Houses were all of mud. No windows were anywhere to be seen. The plows used were of wood. The yields were very poor. The sanitary conditions in Yabna were horrible. Schools did not exist. The rate of infant mortality was high. The western part toward the sea was almost desert. The villages in this area were few and thinly populated. Many ruins of villages were scattered all over the area. As owing to the prevalence of malaria, many villages were deserted by their own inhabitants. Report of the British Commission, 1913. So up to 1913, there was nobody living really in that country. Still. Now, you would be saying, well, these are all Europeans perhaps, right? Slanted. All of what I just said are all Europeans. Well, here is what an Arab Muslim had said. In 985 AD, or CE, the Arab writer Muqaddasi complained that in Jerusalem, the large majority of the population was Jewish, and said the mosque is empty of worshippers. This is 985. Ibn Khaldun, of one of the most credible Arab historians in 1377, wrote, "The Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel extended over 1400 years. It was the Jews who implanted the culture and customs of the permanent settlement." He also wrote, "After 300 years of Arab rule in the Holy Land, he attested that the Jewish culture and tradition were still dominant. And by that time, there was still no evidence of any Palestinian roots or culture, let alone really Arab." The historian James Parker, who was also of Arab descent, during the first century after the Arab conquest of 1670 through 740, the caliph and governors of Syria and the Holy Land ruled entirely over the Christian and Jewish subjects. Apart from the Bedouin in the earliest years, the only Arabs west of Jordan were the garrisons. Even though the Arabs ruled the land from 640 to 1090, they never became a majority of the population. Most of the inhabitants were Christians and Jews. So they were, as it was said, there was never many Arabs, or as they called themselves, Palestinians in Israel. Judea, or the Holy Land, or whatever you want to call it, Palestine, and that is a fact. They weren't the Native Americans who always have been living there. And it's a lie to say otherwise and to colorize them as Native Americans. And make up that the Jews somehow are the colonists moving into their land when that is a lie. When no one lived there except for mainly Jews and Christians. For centuries since the fall of Rome, even under the rise of Islam, there are Jews and Christians basically lived there. Now, here's the other lie. What is Zionism? The big lie that it's some sort of secret cabal of secret people. That is the big lie. The big lie that it's a group to control the world. The big lie that they control the banks. The big lie that they control the media. That's the lie of saying Zionist. This is a lie that was purposely advertised via the New World Order to do one main thing. Hate. Hate Jews. hate Zionists. Jews, Zionists, hate. No different, nothing new. The New World has been using hate to, for many peoples, not just Jews, but in Europe. It was distinctly used. Why not use it in the Middle East? Why not use it in the world? And I will later go into that. First of all, the real understanding and the truth behind Zionism. Zionism started when the Jews were conquered by Babylon from Judea when it fell. The first temple had fallen. And many Jews were carted away, particularly its leadership, as they said in their Talmud, as they were led away to Babylon. I will never, ever forget, O Jerusalem, may I cut off my right arm. Zion, by the way, for those who don't understand, is a mount in Jerusalem. It is the mount. Zion is Jerusalem, Zion. It is the mount top of Jerusalem, where the mount of the temple mount is. That is Har Zion, Zion. So what is Zionism? It's the return to that. Nothing big, nothing different. Zionism didn't just come out in the 1800s. It wasn't some Illuminati or New World thing that was created. That is a lie. It was simply one thing. And it was not because of anti-Semitism or because of anything. That was when it was more organized. But it was simply the call for the Jews to return. Just as if the Native Americans returned to their land. No difference. In the 1800s, what people refer to the modern Zionism was more of a movement of Zionism. Still, Zionism is just simply the return. The modern movement was just more organized. Why? Because there was a fear of what was perpetuating in Europe at that time, which did in fact unfold almost, 60 some odd years later, where 6 million Jews were killed. The hatred was building up. It wasn't really religious, but it was more of a nationalistic understanding. First of all, Jews are a nation, not just a race. They are a race. They're a nation. And DNA evidence confirms this. I will not elaborate that, but that is a fact. That's one thing Hitler had right. It's not just a religion. And it's BS to say that the European Jews somehow came from Khazar. That's also pure bullshit, Jew-hating propaganda. The Jews who, in fact, this is historically accurate, lived in Europe first along the Rhine. After the fall of Rome. And when the many crusaders came along the way, they dispersed from the Rhine to the east after thousands were being raped and slaughtered by the crusaders. And they moved where in the east? Poland, Russia. And so on, Ukraine. Now, throughout centuries, Jews have always been migrating back to Israel. The many Kabbalists and Sfat go there from 1300s, 1200s, 1100, 900, and go to the city of Sfat and see it for yourself. That's an old city where Kabbalists were consistently coming back there, and that was a thriving community of Jews. Mohammedis himself, also known as Rambam, and other distinguished rabbis were consistently going back and forth. And he was actually ran to because of a fear of being killed by the Spaniards at that time. Or many Jews actually from Spain left Spain and actually emigrated to Israel after the expulsion in 1400s by the queen herself. Or no, you had to be Christian. In the 1800s, Jews began to immigrate, by the way, to Israel. More in an organized fashion. That was the only difference. As Jews moved there, making sudden economy open up in Israel, or what you call Palestine, so did many of the Arabs surrounding, as stated earlier, from neighboring areas. People just want to live, right? Economics, better meant for their family. It's all logical. So the Arabs, like many, were there for their economics. And why was it suddenly growing? Jews. Jews came there and made it thriving, because that is their homeland. After World War I, this is when the new Illuminati, the new world order, sunk in their teeth. You have to think of things that would happen at that time. It was 1913 when things started to unfold. The Federal Reserve Act. A lot of things was happening at the time. And we all know that the Crown of England is the head of the world order, with her court being the Rothschilds, whose real names are Bowers, German, of course, the Rockefellers, and the Morgans. But before the NWO got their teeth in there, into the Middle East, substantially. And by the way, whenever I say Brits, I'm really talking the synonym of New World Order, because it is one and the same, the way they did things. Anyway, in 1913, January, initially there was entered an agreement between Emir Faisal, who was on behalf of King Hassan of Arabia, and Dr. Weizmann, who represented the Jewish interest, or Zionist movement, whatever, to the effect, giving the Jews their country, and later that was signed by the king. But the king had backed off due to, out of pressure, of implementing that agreement that was already signed on the request of the Brits. Because that would outright have given the Jews a country without needing a mandate. It would have been a country right there and there. Here's your state of Israel. Boom. There you go. Done. Oh, we can't have that. They have to have their fingers in it. So what happened in 1920, without the Jews being there, without the Arabs being there, the San Remo Accords were established, creating the mandate of Palestine to the Brits, with the mandate of Syria going to the French. Iraq was created with the later King Faisal as a Hashemite over Iraq, while King Abdullah, or then Sheikh Abdullah, his brother, got Jordan. Arabia later on went to the Saudi family because the Hashemite Hassan didn't play ball with the Brits and they got pissed off him. So guess what? That's where, why it's Saudi Arabia instead of Hashemite Arabia. Now, oil for the Brits, the New World Order, that was the main reason for what was going on in the Middle East. Has nothing to do with religion or anything else. The New World Order was about power. Power at that time was controlling the energy, the assets, the banks wanted the assets. Banks wanted the oil. Oil was the world. Under the San Remo, the mandate of Palestine was ratified by the League of Nations. The organization of the New World Order was implemented via the Treaty of Lausanne with the Ottomans, officially ending the war. These are the terms of the San Remo, a great conference. To accept the terms of the mandate articles as given below, with reference to Palestine, on the understanding that there was inserted in the process verbal and understanding by the mandatory power that this would not involve the surrender of the rights here, though enjoyed by the non-Jewish communities in Palestine, thus undertaking to refer the question of a religious protector of France, which has been settled earlier in the previous afternoon by the undertaking given by the French. I'm literally reading this literally. By the French government, that they recognize this protector as being at the end. That the terms of the mandate article should be as follows. High contracting parties agree that the Syria and Mesopotamia shall, in accordance with the following Article 22, part of the Covenant of League of Nations, be provisional, recognized as independent states, subject to the rendering of the administrative device, sentenced by the mandatory under such time as they shall stand alone. The boundaries of said states will be determined and selective of the mandatories made by the applied allied powers. Who are the allied powers? United States, Italy, UK, France. Get it? The High Contracting Power agreed to entrust by application of the provisions, Article 22, the administration of Palestine within the boundaries as determined by the principle. The mandatory will be responsible for putting together in effect the declaration made in November 8, 1917. by the British government, adopted by all Allied powers in favor of an establishment in Palestine of a home, national home, for the Jewish people. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done without prejudice civil rights of those who are non-Jewish, meaning that those people would not have to leave or be moved out, but that country would be, in fact, a Jewish state. Now, that's a fact. Now, if you want to know the Middle East, again, it's all about the oil, the New World Order, the Brits. They knew it. So they got it. They got the mandate. They had Iraq with a king that was under their puppet in both areas, Arabia and Iraq, where most of the oil was. They had the Emirates. They had all the sheikhs. They had everything. They had the oil that was coming out of Iraq. It was being sent through via railroad through the famous Damascus line that went straight to the refineries in Haifa. Why do you think they did not want to give up Israel? Refineries in Israel refining the oil wouldn't have to exactly put it on boats and move it all around the Suez to get to Europe now, wouldn't, for its empire. It was just how neat. Chevron couldn't have made it any better. Of course, who was Chevron? Standard Oil. Rockefeller, right? Hint, hint. BP, hint, hint. You have same common interest, same common owners up to the top. So now they control the oil, like I said. And there was no way now they wanted to give that control to the Jews. So what did they do to this? And this is no surprise. The Brits, what were they? Because the Jews were actually too organized. And they were actually surprised how fast the Jews were organizing a real country. They didn't expect this. So what did they have to do? They had a problem because the Brits were acting as trustee according to the San Remo agreements and the Lausanne and how it was ratified. They literally were the trustees of the new Jewish state of Israel. They didn't want that to come into being because guess what? They lose control. So what did they do? In 1920, they brought in Amin el-Husseini, the Mufti of Jerusalem. Who is el-Husseini? Amin al-Husseini, he was, first of all, he had an allegiance with the Ottoman Empire during the Armenian genocide. In fact, he was first-hand officer in Smyrna and participated in first-hand, by the way, the genocide of the Armenian people. 1.5 million Armenians were slaughtered under the sword of Islamic Jihad of the Ottoman Empire. And who was there? The Palestinian leader, the Grand Mufti. Great guy to bring in. Now, this is what you have to understand. The Arabs, up into them, the Muslims and the Jews got along. The Muslims had no problem of Jews having their own little country. Because to them, it was like a little country. They had no problem with it. Who didn't have a problem with it? The British. That's why they brought the Amin al-Husseini. And then this, by the way, is a fact. They brought him in against the vote of the desire of the Muslim people, the Arabs, that are living there. In fact, he came in fourth place in the votes, not even second or third. So, hey, they had an election. It didn't work out. So we're just going to stick him there anyway. And though he was rejected, nonetheless, he became the head. He was neither, by the way, a sheikh or accredited leader, nor he was an Amin. He didn't being as what they call Alim, which is an Islamic scholar. But he became the permanent Arab power in Palestine for on behalf of Muslim Arabs. His brutality became so notorious. It was, like I said, it was notoriously directed by local Muslim leadership. Amin al-Husseini, by the way, is the uncle of Arafat. You'll see there are dots that connect. El-Husseini began his lifelong campaign of inciting hatred from 1920 to 1921 between Jews and Muslims under the British Mandate of Palestine. He immediately began his rule of terror, even over local Muslim leaders who denounced him as king, basically killed him. Ahmed Husseini implemented, of course, restoration of the Dome of Rock and Al-Aqsa. He was the one who put the gold plate on the dome for the first time, because they didn't really care at that time. You know that dome rock, you think it was all holy to them? Never really was under Muslims. You would think it was important as a holy site, but it really, how was it? Now, the Muslim Brotherhood was established in Egypt by Hassan el-Banna in guess what year? 1928. And who is one of the heads of it? Amin al-Husseini became the central member and idol inspiration for the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, there was the mother organization for today's Egyptian Jihad and Hamas. See the dots connecting? The Muslim Brotherhood preaches Wahhabi Islam, which justifies the violent means to rid the Muslim world of its non-Islamic element. Its envision, by the way, is a pan-Islamic empire, which are strictly ruled under Islamic rules. Just read what the, you know, Muslim Brotherhood says. It's fact. And it's from 1928. Coincidence of time? Who is behind it? New World Order. In 1929, Amin el-Husseini organizes more riots in Palestine. He spreads false rumors to even turn local Muslims against Jews, randomly murdering Jews in Hebron. In fact, the Jewish community was for over 1,000 years mainly Jewish up until the 20s. Hebron is a Jewish city. And so the hate began, and by who? El-Husseini, who, by the way, allied himself with Hitler, only to kill Jews with his Arab Muslim SS in Bulgaria. The Brits, of course, at the same time, in the 1930s, initiated the infamous White Paper, not allowing Jews, limiting Jews from entering the mandate. Isn't that contrary to their mandate? They're supposed to create a place for the Jewish to move there, right? Now they're stopped. In their own paper policy, they've stopped it. This is not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence this happened during the 30s when Hitler took over. Coincidence. Even during World War II, when Jews were being slaughtered by Nazis, the Brits, the New World Order, would not allow Jews to escape. Their goon became, because of the Brits' obvious policy, established a war directly with the Brits. This separated them from Ben-Gurion's Haganah during World War II, because they were trying to, in their own illusion, appease the Brits, not realizing that they were being toyed with. After World War II, things changed, of course, and the Haganah became apparent with the Hamas became the means against the Brits. In fact, they've always been were smuggling Jews, but now they had full-on war with the Brits and realized they had to get rid of them. The Brits, again, are the New World Order. Out of such heavy military pressure, which transpired by the Nazis and Soviet pressure, you know, even though they didn't like Jews, they were the enemy of the New World Order at that time, up until, of course, the fall. The Soviets, who were a threat, like I said, to the New World Order, the Brits. The new UN tried to resolve the dispute with 181, knowing full well it was going to be rejected. Israel unilaterally announced its independence after finally getting the Brits finally left with a tail between their legs, but they weren't finished. The New World Order, the Brits, had other plans. Knowing that the US would go ahead and vote, they abstained into being independent. It was a game. Oh, look, we really tried. You know, the U.S., we really wanted them to be a nation. But there, by the way, when I say U.S., U.S. is basically part of the New World Order, providing our, but so anyway, getting back, Israel was backed by, again, by the Soviets, by providing arms, which, while the Brits were organizing and training, implementing the destruction of the new state of Israel. And who was the head of the Arab League? The Arab Legion was John Babbitt Glove, a British officer who even afterward was highly direct. He was knighted and decorated for for the attempted destruction of Israel. Get that. The Mufti, in the meantime, demanded all Arabs to leave. They never even considered the Israeli Palestinians, only as Muslim Arabs. This was a Muslim thing. It was Muslim Arabs against Jews. It had nothing to do about land. It was about religious control. This is in the minds of at that time and even far on amongst the Arabs toward Jews. Out of fear from the Arab countries and the Mufti and the fear of what Jews might do, this is mainly out of Arab propagandists, they wanted the Arabs wanted land for themselves. If they went against the Jews, they didn't really give one iota about the Arabs that were living there. I'm talking about the Arabs who initiated, who went along with the Brits to try to destroy Israel. The main goal by the Brits, by the way, and then was to secure, get re-control of that area again. But the Jews, Israel, overcame that and screwed their plans. Again, because of the Soviets supplying the Jews in Israel. The Brits' partner, by the way, the U.S., though, voted, like I said, for Israel as a show, but at the same time had an arms embargo against Israel, which lasts until 1967. The U.S. also, during that time, had a naval blockade against Israel, so Israel was getting its arms diverted via Czechoslovakia by the Soviets to Israel. It was not until 1950s did things switch and Nasser overcame Egypt and allied itself with the Soviets and seized control of the Suez. The French backed in Israel then in 1956 with the Brits and so switched sides only to use Israel. Israel was being consistently attacked being attacking their military, but their civilians by Nasser's and Yasser Arafat, who actually is an Egyptian. So there was a switch out of control of the Suez. Nasser was allied with the Soviets. And so there was a switch of sides, which was paramount in that time. A complete swing around, 360 or 180, really. Israel began to be a thorn now to the Soviets, as they were now being supplied and allied with the French. And the Soviets were allied with who? Syria and Egypt. In 1967, the Soviets believed Israel was becoming a nuclear power and that had nuclear power abilities. So what they do, they plan the war. This is verified. They plan the war with the Arabs, puppets, Syria, Egypt, and Jordan, who was actually a sort of a stooge in it, didn't realize it, or manipulated to go to war. Of course, you know what happened? They lost. In 1973, again, the Soviets helped plan another attack. In fact, were ahead of the war, ran it against Israel, knowing Israel was a thorn of control. Now become solely, after 1967, very much allied with behind the United States, recognizing, wow, Israel can be a real thorn. That's why the U.S. from 67 then became allied to Israel. Notice how the scheme is shift of risk in the New World Order. They were all being manipulated. Yet Palestine was a myth. It was now being, the myth was being used by the Soviets, who actually backed and developed the PLO. It was never about the reality. It was only about using to manipulate to gain control of what? The Middle East. Israel being in the middle, being the thorn in a very strategic area for the Soviets at that time. Remember, before it was the Brits. Israel won, and of course, in 1970, in fact, there was a yellow alert because the Soviets were actually trapped in Cairo. That's when Rockefeller's Kissinger came into the picture. Ho, ho. And the NWO made a major check move. By him coming into the picture, he met with Sadat, which now got the Soviets out of there, which implemented the peace between Egypt and Israel. And who was became part of the NWO was Sadat himself. Later, Mubarak were fully under the control of the New World Order. Begin at the time still was a big problem for the New World Order. Though he signatured the Camp David Accord, he still was a major problem for the New World Order. The New Order did not want him to enter Lebanon in the 80s, but he did, nonetheless. Because New World Order had backing of Arafat, was beginning to make its move. In the 1980s, the NW made Arafat part of them by sparing him and the PLO. When he was, when that happened, the capitulation of the PLO in Lebanon, and he ran to Tunisia, that's when he was now part of them officially. Well, the Soviets were completely out. If you look at all the attendees, by the way, to the Bilderberg meetings, you will see these names. Arafat, Abbas, Fayyad, Peres, Rabin, Assad, Mubarak, the Saudis, both Israeli leaders of the labor, plus like Levini, all and all Arab leaders. Shamir, by the way, was twisted to get to the Madrid. Bush Sr., we all know who's Illuminati, had forced him. This Madrid led to Oslo, and who went to the Oslo was Arafat later. PLO, Peres, Rabin, who was now president for Oslo, Clinton, who was the PM of the Brits, Blair, all attendees of the Bilderbergs and all New World Order. Obama, Hillary were attendees, Cheney, Kerry, Bush Jr. The point of Oslo was never about creating a state of Palestine. It was to impose control over the Middle East. A Saudi initiative even specifically says they will normalize and later became a union, a league. This is like the European League. So here's where the Palestinian myth becomes a reality. Per the PLO, there are no differences between Jordanians, Palestinians, Syrians, Lebanese. We are all of one nation. It is only for political reasons that we carefully underline our Palestinian identity. Yes, the existence of a separate Palestinian identity serves only one as a tactical purpose. The founding of a Palestinian state is a tool in our continuing battle against Israel. Zuhar Mohsin, military command of the PLO. The Syrians had once said, there is no such thing as Palestine. Palestine is a term the Zionists invented. There is no Palestine in the Bible. Our country was for centuries part of Syria. Palestine is alien to us. It is the Zionists who introduced it. Ayub bin Abdul Hadi, Syrian Arab leader to the British Peel Commission, 1937. The Saudis, in 1956, at the UN, it is common knowledge that Palestine is nothing but southern Syria. Get it? It's a myth. But there has been a great lie to the Muslims themselves. This is by the New World Order, manipulated and used by within the imams and clerics who are part of the New World Order. We have lied to you, the Muslims, the great, our brothers, believers of Muhammad. In the Quran, it says, and you look this up, 17:104, Quran, it says specifically, and thereafter we, Allah, said to the children of Israel, dwell securely in the promised land, and when the last warning will come to pass, we will gather you together in a mingled crowd. So why the hate of your brother? Real simple. Why the denial and the myths? Really, really simple. Continue the methods of separation, division, divide, with its ugly fruit being hatred. They, the Illuminati, the New World Order, have got you by the balls, as the late George Carlin had once said. The politicians aren't what determines policy. It's the real owners, and you ain't one of them. They know it, and they got you by the balls. So, you can continue your hate, and you will surely capitulate, or you can wake up and not. Knowing this is how the New World Order works. In Europe, the New World Order has successfully instilled hate toward Israel, Zionists. If they call themselves Zionists, it's so that you will evolve and hate them as well. It's like the old Star Wars thing. I love it when you hate me. Feel your hate, and then you become welcome to our side, the dark side. That is what they are doing. 9/11 was carried out by the New World Order to kill four birds with one stone. Remove the liberties from Americans. Place fear among Americans with the war of terror. Number three, perpetuate the BS reason to enter Iraq to establish a military base, a perpetual state. That's why there was never an exit strategy, because there wasn't supposed to be one. There was supposed to be a permanent base there, which there will be, and they will always have one. Preparing the stranglehold of the Middle East. FY, Iran is already under the New World Order. That is why Obama and many freaked out of the Green Movement, by the way. That would have fucked up their plans now, wouldn't it? And lastly, just like in Europe, hating Zionists and Jews, hate Muslims. Think about it. It's always the other guy. So anyway, the NW plan was, using Oslo was to create a central office, was to be Jerusalem. But Benjamin Netanyahu, the present PM of Israel, has screwed them up with this. This is why Obama and the Clintons don't like them too much. So now they have a new plan. It's called Plan B. And here's Plan B. Remember, out of chaos comes order. And in their case, the New World Order. Here's Plan B. The PA is going to go to the UN for unilateral statehood. Know it. It would fail in the UN, in the Security Council because of the U.S. veto, right? Now it goes to the General Assembly. So what does Israel do? It annexes the Jewish areas in the West Bank. Please note, as Assad goes down in Syria, what is happening to Jordan? Jordan is becoming increasingly stronger. After the PA move in, the UN, Congress will immediately block any aid to the PA. The EU is right now bankrupt. They will not come to the aid of the PA. They have no money to do it. Nor will any Arab or Muslim country. In the meantime, Israel and Jordan will initiate the Jordan option, which has been always on the table amongst themselves, or both will control the world or the West Bank. Most of the PA have, by the way, have gotten or are about to get a Jordanian citizenship. Abbas, Fayyad, all of them have Jordanian citizenship. Why would you start a new country and or just now, just recently, get Jordanian citizenship if you're going to be a Palestinian? Now, why would the president, like I said, get that? A different citizenship? Hello, the writing's on the wall. The fall of Mubarak was planned. The Egyptian army right now and the Israeli army have already set to allow the Egyptian control of Gaza by force if necessary. This is the excuse. Hamas did it for them. Don't even realize what's going on. They're being now getting. They're going to be target too. But this is down the road. What's really going to set things in motion? What the chaos is going to be? As Assad goes down, the Hezbollah will lose its power. That's causing the Christians and especially the Sunnis as payback for killing their leader. Violence, war, like never you've seen before. This will unleash the Shiite-Sunni World War III. This is the plan of the world order, and it's already set in motion. Thus, the myth of Palestine is what it is, simply a tool of the hate. The main point I was saying, that was a myth, but the other circumstances of the Shiite-Sunni war are going to become a reality if people don't wake up. And the control, by the way, of the Middle East is basically to utilize hate. Division was so the epitome of the Middle East. Dr. Martin Luther King once said about those who hate Zionists, and he once said, "The anti-Semite rejoices at any opportunity to vent his malice. The times have made it unpopular in the West to proclaim open hatred of Jews. Thus, this being the case, the anti-Semite must constantly seek new forms and forums for his poison. Now he must revel in the new masquerade. He doesn't hate the Jews. He just hates the Zionists." You see, Palestine is a myth, a product of the New World Order. For the spread of the hatred to do, the one thing is to control. But if we, humanity, realize this, and talking, including all my brothers, or whether Islam, Christian, Jew, whatever, Buddhist, Hindu, we realize that we are in reality. We are in reality, not separated from the universe, not separated from Earth, not separated from God or Allah, not separated from each other. Then reality is that we love all, this love, this knowing that we are all connected, is what the New World Order do not want you to believe in, or in fact realize the truth of it. We are all one. One universe, one consciousness, all deeply connected to each and every one of us, connected to God, Allah, connected to the universe. And with that, God bless you all, love and light, and have a glorious, glorious weekend. And thank you for your time, and thank you for listening. God bless you all. Thanks.